two sets of twins, a pair of dogs, four cows, and a couple of winemakers. It's mostly even numbers in our feature story this week.
Well, not entirely. There are a few odd numbers in the mix at Te Whare Rā Vineyard in Marlborough. The flower days grow seven different varieties of grape on 11 hectares, and some of their vines are the oldest in the region, planted back in the 1970s.
The name Te Whare Rā means the house in the sun, and technically we are the oldest small winery in Marlborough and the second oldest. So the winery was originally established, or the vineyard was planted in 1979, and it's kind of one of the Marlborough originals.
This is Anna Flowerday, originally from South Australia. Her Kiwi husband grew up in Marlborough, and both of them have wine growing in the blood.
Jason and I bought the property in the latter half of 2003. You know, done our time working as winemakers for other people and doing overseas harvests and that kind of thing, and I guess it got to the stage where we really wanted to do our own thing. And we're really umming and ahhing about where that was going to be. But we just love the history and the provenance and the, you know, the realness of Te Whare Rā. I think we'd got a bit kind of jaded and cynical about made-up brands. And also the fact that it was the home to the oldest vines in Marlborough was really attractive, because I think we'd worked a lot with older vines in South Australia. And sort of our vision was to take this place back to being, you know, what it originally was. It was one of those kind of cult places that everybody was like, oh, if you've got one day there and you can only see five people, Te Whare Rā must be on the list.
Anna's forebears first planted grapes in 1854 in the McLaren Vale wine region near Adelaide. She and Jason are carrying on the tradition using a combination of organic and biodynamic practices.
The front block, which is planted east-west, which is quite unusual now for Marlborough because a lot of the plantings have been turned north-south, that has our oldest vines. So those were planted by the original founders, Alan and Joyce Hogan, in 1979.
What variety?
We have Riesling, Gewürztraminer and Chardonnay. And sorry, we just
have
a dog.
Have we here?
This is Ruby. She's our red lab, so she thinks she owns the place. So, yeah, no, she'll just rock on into the middle of the interview. And
she's having
she
a good snack.
Yeah, just seeing, visit all the other
out,
dogs you've been visiting.
I actually have been around a lot of dogs recently.
There's a lot of, you know, a lot of checking out to be done there. So it's a mixture of some really old vines and then some kind of mid-80s plantings, and then some of the plantings Jason and I have changed since we've been here. So interestingly, the property did not have any Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, interesting. We are in Sauvignon Blanc country after all.
We are, exactly. We're in the home, you know, the new world home of Sauvignon Blanc. So something quite ironic about, you know, buying the one or two vineyards that, you know, didn't have any. But we saw that as an opportunity, and so we have planted some now, and the Sauvignon we make is actually a blend of different subregions of Marlborough, because we really want to show, kind of capture those differences and the blend that we're trying to make. So, we have got some planted on the property now.
What's the wine that you're most proud of?
That's a hard one. That's like asking me which one's my favourite kid. It depends on the day. I guess I love showing people that Marlborough is not just a one-trick pony, you know, and we've really focused on that. Like, I mean, Sauvignon is obviously a significant part of our production, but we're probably not as dominated by that variety as a lot of the industry is. You know, for a lot of producers here, that would be 80 or 90% of their production. Sauvignon for us, sorry, we have another dog now appearing. That's Max. He's our Vischler. Yeah, so we, Sauvignon's probably a, you know, a solid third of our production, and then we make a lot of other aromatic whites. Riesling is my ultimate favourite white variety, and it's a real unsung hero for New Zealand. But then we also make an aromatic white blend called Tordu, so they're probably my favourite whites. And then as far as red goes, it has to be Pinot. Like, besides marrying Jason, Pinot's kind of what brought me to New Zealand. I sort of joke it was a 50-50 of him and Pinot, but I think, you know, Pinot is the winemaker's grape.
It's Veraison when I visit. The grapes are just changing colour. Much of Marlborough's vineyard work is now mechanised, but at Te Whare Rā, they rely on people to do the work.
The farming is very careful because we have to be preventative. There's not a quick fix option when it comes to, you know, disease pressure and things like that. So, yeah, we do a lot of work throughout the growing season. I mean, basically, Jason and our team are out here every day. You know, each vine gets, you know, basically on a first-name basis. So, you know, you've done shoot thinning earlier in the season. You're obviously doing the wire lifting as we go. We've also done leaf removal around the bunch zone and stuff like that, and just constantly sort of adjusting, you know. And that's why we believe in people, which I think is an important part of organics, but also an important part of quality, because a person looking at a vine can make a much more informed decision, even someone with only a little bit of experience, of what that individual vine needs and a little tweak here and there that a machine's never going to do, because it just does the same thing. It's quicker and cheaper and faster, but you're missing out on the small details. And I feel like those... Excuse me, Ruby. I feel like the small details are the important stuff.
They've managed to find enough hands to do the work so far, despite the challenges finding workers brought by COVID-19. Benji Smith joined the team recently. Benji, what are you doing?
We are just removing some exterior leaf. We're going to open up the fruit zone a little bit so we can get a bit more airflow through and a little bit more sunlight onto it as well.
How are the grapes looking at the moment, and how's the weather been for them?
Hot, but it's looking very good. We're very happy with how things are going so far.
Benji, how long have you worked here?
At Te Whare Rā, I've been here for about 4 months now.
And what's your normal occupation?
I would normally be a sommelier in a restaurant, actually. I stopped working so that I could start studying, but then something happened last year that prevented that, something in the name of COVID stopped me studying, so I'm still here in the vineyards. That's great working with people like Anna and Jason, who are just an absolute wealth of knowledge. It's really going to help when I do eventually start studying. A lot of the information they've given me is going to be hugely beneficial.
You're working quickly here. I'm having to move out the way very...
A lot of vines to go.
As Anna explains, Te Whare Rā is a low-yield vineyard.
All of our vines are pruned to only 2 canes. So we're already kind of pre-selecting for half the crop than some of the more commercial vineyards might be targeting at. And that's the thing, it's horses for courses. It depends on what you're trying to do. It's not like that's wrong and we're right. It's just that we're doing a different thing. So, yeah, we're basically trying to grow the grapes with the most amount of flavour and the most complexity, and therefore we're only asking our vines to produce basically half the crop. There's a really great quote, "Perfection is a lot of small things done well." And we really believe in that. That's kind of part of what we do. I mean, Jason calls them the one percenters, because sometimes, and the dogs are having a fight in the background. Awesome. Thank you very much for that. It's all about every little detail, adjusting a bit of crop here, taking off a bunch there, just looking at that vine. Does that need, all of those things really add up in the whole growing season of what we can do?
They're having fun.
Yeah, they are. They're living a dream. But no, I'm coming back in my next life as a winery and vineyard dog. I think they have basically the best life possibly imaginable. So
it's coming up to the harvest season, and with COVID and all the labour requirements, especially in a handcrafted situation like this, how are you going to cope?
Yeah, it's pretty challenging. I think it's obviously something the industry's been pretty proactive about. New Zealand wine growers have been onto it from the start and liaising with government and, providing information about what we were going to need. The pruning work is obviously done over winter, and there were people here to do that, enough numbers in Marlborough. Spring and summer, we've still got a reasonable number of RSE workers here, and that has been supplemented by people who've chosen to stay in New Zealand or people looking for a bit of a change. But then, coming up to harvest, it's definitely a challenge, because harvest is quite, especially the winery aspect of it, it's quite a skilled job. You can't just grab somebody off the street and put them in charge of a $70,000 or $100,000 press, for example. It's something the industry's been, we've been worried about and been working on since the early part of the year, because normally there'd be a significant proportion of, qualified winemakers coming in from overseas for that harvest period.
But Anna says they're sorted with an all-Kiwi crew in the winery this year. We're out of the vines now in the hay paddock. The flower day's cows are in the shade under a stand of oak trees.
It's quite funny that we have these four oaks, because I always look at, because they sort of change colour at slightly different times, and I feel like it's like our four, destined to have four kids with these four oak plantings. I don't know why. I've become slightly obsessed with even numbers of things. So, I like that there's four trees. So, yeah.
And you have an interesting family, don't you?
Yes, we do. That was sort of not exactly part of the plan, but we, in the first, first 4 years of being here, we managed to have two sets of twins. So I still think it's something in the water in Marlborough, because no family history of twins on either side of the family. So either it's a flavour compound of Sauvignon Blanc that causes multiple births, or, so that was a bit of a wild ride, because we'd already sort of bitten off nearly more than we could chew with kind of buying this old winery and bringing it back to life again and, you know, lots of TLC and him changing the branding, and then that happened to us. So it's made us very good at multitasking.
How far apart were the sets?
3 years and 4 days. So their birthdays are even in the same week, which is totally bizarre.
That must be an amazing week of celebration.
Yes, we call that birthday palooza because basically it's just like a week of, you know, birthday crazy. But at least it's in September, so it's not close to harvest and it's not too close to Christmas or anything. So it's nice for the girls to have their, you know, they've got to share their birthday.
How old are they now?
The older two are 16. And the younger two are 13. So that's a whole other different thing. We have two learner drivers and all these things. It's different kind of busy than, you know, 2 3-year-olds and 2 newborns, but equally as, you know, challenging, I think.
Do they help in the vineyard?
Yeah, no, they do help. They've sort of chosen, I think, different aspects of it that they kind of are into. But I feel like there's no pressure on them to carry this on. Do you know what I mean? If it's not, it was our dream to do this. And it is a lot of hard slog and, you know, running a small business in New Zealand is, you know, the wine industry really, on the scale we're doing it, is as big a commitment as owning a dairy farm or something. It's a lot of the year, it's 7 days a week, it's long hours. And I feel like for the girls, probably look at it sometimes and see, God, mum and dad are so stressed and so this. And, you know, I think they'd probably like wine and they're interested in what we do, but I wouldn't blame them if they didn't choose it for themselves.
Anna says the paddock where we're standing is the real heart of the vineyard.
I really love the concept of kaitiakitanga and what that means. And I think we really take that on board as organic growers in that we, you know, because when we took over this vineyard, a lot of the old vines were, you know, were struggling. And the soil had, you know, was quite depleted and it was really rock hard on top. And a lot of people said to us, oh, look, that old vineyard's past it. You're going to have to pull that out and start again. And we were like, no, that's what we've come here for. And I think, you know, Jason's skill as a viticulturist and just a thoughtful farmer is really important to being able to do what we've been able to, because you've had to bring the soil back to life to then in turn bring the vines back to life. In the winter, the cows are in the vineyard and they graze the mid-rows, not the cover crop rows, but the grass row. And then we just let them have basically a fresh break of, you know, a row or two each day, and then they're back in the paddock at night. So they're not on the soil for a long period of time. They're basically eating down the grass. They obviously very helpfully spread cow manure as they go. And then we cut our prunings onto the rows where they've been. So then Jason goes through and mulches that all up, and we also spray on a compost brew kind of on that. So it obviously breaks the pruning down a lot faster. You're getting that organic matter back in. In the summer, the cows are back in this part of the paddock. But then we also reuse the winery washdown water to keep this green, or, you know, keep parts of it going over summer. So we're just trying to build up organic matter in the soil. You know, we're trying to make the place more drought tolerant. You know, hopefully adapted to climate change.
Bit of wildlife coming to say hello.
Yeah.
As the cows get curious, Jason takes over the tour. He's keen to show what he describes as some of the secret sauce behind Te Whari Rā.
So this is one of the cow pat pits, Billy. So this here is beautiful. So that there, after 12 weeks, goes from cow manure to that. Absolutely beautiful. The smell, you can't smell that. It's just great, perfect soil. You can't get anything better.
And what would you do with that?
So we spray that out in spring and in autumn. We mix it in with seaweed and a little bit of humate sometimes, and we put it on as an inoculum to the soil. You basically need around about 2.5 kilos per hectare. We produce enough to do this vineyard plenty of times over. You know, it's got great texture, holds moisture well, and it's full of life.
So, a compost of grape skins, stalks, hay and manure is also added to the vineyard in the autumn.
For us, biodynamics is a part of the organic system. We, you know, in a way pick out the bits that we want to use and enjoy the most.
We're down at the winery now. It'll be a hive of activity soon with harvest nearing.
Come on in. Feel the temperature change?
Absolutely. Nice and cool in here, nice out of that cool. Hot Marlborough sun.
Might find some important jobs to do in here today, I think.
This used to be an old tractor shed, or part of this used to be?
Yeah, I think Anna tells the story probably better than I do, but the original owners told us that initially when they were setting up the winery and the vineyard, the banks said to them, listen, we'll loan you some money for a tractor shed, not a winery, because they believed that the wine industry wasn't going to be successful. So
pretty old.
Look how much it's changed since 1979, I suppose. It's amazing. So, yeah.
And you've got an array of tanks here. Is there any blending that goes on at all?
Yeah, we do a bit of blending, but I think the main difference is what we're trying to achieve with the vineyard comes through into the winery. So we've got lots of individual varietals out there, but there's also individual blocks within the vineyard, different clonal mixtures. So we really want to emphasise the vineyard into the winery. So by having more tanks, it gives us more options at picking time. But then you can blend from there. But we'd rather make lots of small batches of wine to then make the overall blend. And that allows us to, you know, put together the best example of the vineyard in the season. It's a massive investment to have this many small tanks. And sort of the way we're doing it, but in the end, I think it gives us a lot better result out of what we're farming. Or you could take the approach of just going and picking that one vineyard, putting it in one tank and one ferment.
Now, who takes precedence in the winemaking section?
No, I think it's very much a team effort. Like, I don't think you can get, like, that we know a lot of winemakers married to winemakers, but not necessarily winemakers who work together. But I think it's quite a unique thing. I think we're totally on the same page with most things there. 95% of the time I'd say we agree, and if we don't, well, we might. The handy thing about having little tanks is we can do a little parcel separately. Lucy, our assistant winemaker, gets involved as well too, so it's very much a team effort, because I think because wine's very subjective, it's important to have different opinions and different kind of takes on it, because otherwise... Is that fair enough? We probably have
more marital discussions
about other impacts of being in business together than that.
No, I definitely agree. I think that's one of the lucky things, that I think if we were polar opposites, I think you'd probably start seeing it in the wines a little bit as well. I think the way I would like to sum up how we are probably taking wine is that I want to show a purity of wine. We spend 9 months growing this amazing fruit, and the last thing I want to do is bring it into the winery and start to trick it up. And I really want that fruit to represent what we've grown in that season. And I think purity is underestimated how hard it is to actually create something that's pure, that hasn't been played around with, and using winemaking techniques to make it taste like something. You've got to grow that flavour. And we don't like adding flavour. We like growing it. And I think that makes a big, big difference.
It's almost like Marlborough with the sort of noise turned down a little bit. They're not, you know, they're not flashy and they're not showy, but they're really interesting wines. And we wanted to do something really long term, and it's been important to us to really craft a range of equivalent quality. I think we never want to be that person where somebody goes, oh yeah, their blah 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 is really good, but their other ones are a bit crap.
Marlborough doesn't make just great Sauvignon Blanc. The climate allows us to grow a number of different varieties and actually produce them to a level where they are benchmark around the world.
How does Te Whare Rā fit in with this big machine that is the Marlborough wine industry?
Yeah, I think for us it's a bit of a challenge, because for a wee while I think we, you know, felt like a little white bait swimming in the opposite direction from a school of salmon. But I feel like we've found some kindred spirits. Like, there's some other organic growers here, definitely on the same page, and, you know, other producers in other parts of New Zealand. Like, yes, what we grow here is amazing, but people's perception is, you know, this pure green island at the bottom of the world that does amazing stuff. And I think we need to be very careful that we're walking the walk about that and not just talking the talk, because there's a lot of movement now, especially in a lot of countries in Europe, to look at how farming is carried out, you know, reducing the use of agrochemicals, especially with, you know, the global interest, I guess, in the impacts of herbicides like Roundup and things like that. That's really making people question a little bit more. And a number of European wine-grown regions are banning that and phasing it out. And I think the pressure is going to come on us to do the same. So I think we need to be ahead of the game with that. If we think it's not going to happen, we're kidding. We've got our heads in the sand.
Back to the present day, though, and the Flower Days say the past year with the global pandemic has been tough. They rely on the bar and restaurant trade, and that's been badly hit in key markets.
We've got pretty solid distribution in Australia and New Zealand, and that's keeping the doors open right now. But, you know, we've taken a massive hit in the UK. That's a really big market for us. It's probably about 40% of our sales that we just don't have this year. I mean, normally, you know, we've sent a couple of containers to the UK, you know, right now, and we've sent nothing of Sauvignon. You know, we've sent little top-ups of other things. So, that's really challenging, because it just evaporates overnight. You know, there's all this talk about pivot. I actually kind of hate that word right now, because it's like, what are you... You know, you can't totally reinvent yourself. And like Jason was saying, we don't have the size and scale to make, you know, cheaper, lower-tier wine, so we've just had to be smart about where we sell, look for other opportunities where, you know, there is a niche or people are willing to pay a bit more of a premium price point.
Upstairs now to the cellar door, which has been one of the bright spots amid worries about COVID. While customer numbers have halved, they're digging deeper into their pockets, and there's more time for the Flower Days to tell their story.
I think we're being able to give people a better experience, and people are spending more time. They're also buying a lot. We've had a lot of people who, say, used to buy wine somewhere else and are coming and seeking us out because they know they've read all the stuff about support local and buy direct. But yeah, I think we've got a quite diverse group of customers. We've got some originals who, you know, probably have been buying Te Whare Rā for 30 plus years. We've got some people that are more newer customers that have come since Jason and I have been here and might have come through once when we're both standing here with a baby in a front pack and kind of went, wow, these people are crazy. You know, how are they doing that?
And then come back and see you with a baby in a front pack again.
Again, and then hang on a second and be like, what? How did that happen? We're like, yeah, well, that's... Yeah, that's an interesting part of the story. Yeah, we sort of didn't really work out what caused it, but now we know. yeah, but then again, we've got this great group of younger consumers, you know, guys, people in their early 20s, really interested in wine, asking a lot more pertinent questions that we love, that we really want to talk to them about what does organics mean, how are our wines made, you know, how are we looking after our people, how are we looking after the planet. Like, I mean, we love the cellar door because it's that direct interface and no one can tell your story like you can. We love it.
Anna and Jason Flowerday of Te Whare Rā Vineyard in Marlborough.